that, you know, it uses the language of asymptotics, and people use the word asymptotic all the time. In fact, I guess in my life, I started to hear that word somewhere around sixth grade or something like that. I mean, you know, people were talking about asymptotes. But it actually turns out that only very, very few people know what the word asymptotic means. And so I thought I would give you some background in asymptotics. And this is in preparation for understanding Stieltjes series and Stieltjes functions. And this is the class of functions for which there is a general theory about the convergence of Padé approximants. It turns out that eigenvalues of Hamiltonians are Stieltjes functions. And so, but before we do that, I think you need to know this, what this is. So this is a big general field. This is the thing that I find most interesting in mathematics. Asymptotics is a generalization of equality. I think that's the best way to say it. So from the time you're very young, you learn this symbol, okay? And you learn what it means to say that f of x is equal to g of x. And you learn the properties of the equal sign, namely transitivity and symmetry and so on. They're the standard properties. And it turns out that this is actually a very limited statement. This is not very powerful in mathematics. So if you have a very hard problem to solve, if you want to find the answer to a problem, you know, you want to say the answer to a given problem equals blah, you can't do that. Because you can't write down what goes on the right-hand side. Okay? It's just not possible. The problem is too hard to solve. However, it's you don't need the exact answer, okay? Because the exact answer is generally so complicated and so precise that it goes far beyond what you actually need. You might only be satisfied with 10 places accuracy, for example. Why would you need more than 10? It's very unusual. So we generalize this, and we weaken this a little bit to the symbol that, okay? And when you do this, very often you can now say the answer is asymptotic to some function, g of x. Okay? However, this is an incorrect statement. Okay, this symbol, by the way, this symbol is red, is asymptotic to. Okay? This symbol is red is equal to. Okay? And this symbol is red is asymptotic to. But this statement is an incomplete statement. Okay? So an asymptotic approximation must be associated with a limit. Okay? So you must be very careful whenever you write down that symbol to say f of x, you know, f of x is asymptotic to g of x as x approaches something. Okay? As x approaches, so x could approach 0. Or infinity, or some number a, or something like that. But you have to say, as x approaches something. Okay. And sometimes this is written for as a shorthand. You'll see the expression. You'll see the statement f of x is asymptotic to g of x, parenthesis x goes to a, and that is a correct statement. Okay. So what does that mean? Okay. What it means is that the ratio of f of x over g of x in the limit as x approaches a is 1. That's what it means. Okay? Now, there is another, so this is called, this is not an equality, but it is a relation, okay? And this is called an asymptotic relation. Okay, and there is another symbol that you all see all the time when you're reading about asymptotic approximations. And that symbol is this. Okay? This has nothing to do with this. Okay? This means is less than. Okay? This does not mean is less than or something like that. This means is negligible compared with. Okay, so this means is negligible compared with, okay. And the way you would write down, so whenever you write down an asymptotic relation, you must accompany that with a limit. So you might say f of x less, okay, than g of x as x approaches a. And this means that that the limit of f of x over g of x, limit as x approaches a, is 0. Okay? That's what it means. Okay? Now, so it's important to give some examples. So are there any questions about that? Okay. So, for example, sine of x is asymptotic to x as x goes to 0. Okay. X squared is not asymptotic to x as x goes to 0. That's not a true statement. Okay. So, of course, as x goes to 0, x squared is approaching 0. And x is approaching 0. But they are approaching 0 at completely different rates. So the fact that these are getting very close to one another as x goes to 0 is not of importance to us. That is a very, that's a very insignificant fact. The key issue is how fast does that go to 0 and how fast does that go to 0. And you notice the ratio of x squared over x is not 1. Okay? So these are completely different. These have completely different asymptotic behaviors. Okay? Now, in general, are there any questions about that? Yeah?
So it would be more appropriate to say that x squared is negligible compared to x.
Yes, that is true. X squared is negligible compared with x as x goes to 0. That's true. Oh, and one other thing I should say is very, very important. Nothing is asymptotic to 0. Okay? Nothing at all. Okay? So you can never make the statement that f of x is asymptotic to 0 as x approaches a, something like that. That doesn't mean anything. Okay? Of course, 0 is asymptotic to 0, but there isn't any dependence on x there. Okay? But other than that, you can never say that something is asymptotic to 0. Yeah?
So this relation isn't symmetric, is it?
Yes, it's perfectly symmetric. Sure. So if sine of x is asymptotic to x as x goes to 0, then of course x is asymptotic to sine of x as x goes to 0. So it's symmetric in that sense.
But okay. 0 could be asymptotic to x.
No. No, not at all. Not at all. Mm. Because the ratio of the two, the limit of x over 0 is not 1. Or 0 over x is not 1. That doesn't make any difference. That ratio is, that limit does not exist. I mean, it's not 1. It may exist, but it isn't 1. Okay. So
f of x minus a is asymptotic to a. Is that
a thing?
f of x plus a.
Is asymptotic to A? Sure, that could be true as x approaches B, let's say. So as x approaches 0. Could you think of an example? Sure. 1 plus x is asymptotic to 1 as x goes to 0. That's true. Okay. But and that's true, you know, 2 plus x is asymptotic to 2, and it's true for any number. But it is not true that 0 plus x is asymptotic to 0. That is not a true statement. Okay, nothing is asymptotic to 0. So don't do that.
question.
Yeah.
No, if I subtract the two there, like, am I not allowed to do that, to add and subtract on both sides?
In general, you can subtract an asymptotic relation or add an asymptotic relation, but not if you get zero on one side. Okay? So you have to be careful that you're not, you must never end up with a statement that something is asymptotic to zero. This is a mistake that people commonly make, and it is never true. Okay? So, in general, you can operate just the way, when you have an equal sign, what you learn is that you can do the same thing to both sides of an equal sign. You're allowed to do that. You can integrate, you could differentiate, you could square both sides, you can, you know, you could whatever mathematical operation you choose to do, you can do to both sides of an equality if that operation exists, if you can do that, okay? But you are not allowed, there's one thing that you are, and oh, by the way, and you can do this on both sides of an asymptotic approximation, you usually can do these things. For example, you can differentiate, you can integrate. However, differentiation and integration are quite subtle, and you have to verify that the asymptotic approximation can be integrated or differentiated. And there are some very powerful theorems, which I'm not going to go into, and it's a very short course. Okay, but theorems that justify integration and differentiation are called Abelian theorems and Tauberian theorems. You may have heard of them, and that they justify differentiating both sides of an asymptotic approximation. Okay, Abelian, named after Abel. Okay, Abelian and Tauberian theorems, okay, and there are many theorems. I mean, there are many, because there are many possible conditions. If the function has a certain measure, and you can do this and this, you know, I mean, it's actually rather complicated. However, the rule of thumb is that if we are finding an asymptotic approximation to the solution of a differential equation, which I'm going to show you in a minute, okay, then generally you can differentiate both sides of our asymptotic relation without worrying about it. That's the rule of thumb, okay? So that's very nice. It's very, very nice. And the reason, just maybe I'm jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but the reason why this is true is that it's much more delicate to differentiate both sides of an asymptotic approximation. You have to be very, very careful when you do that, okay? But if you have a differential equation, but integration generally is not so dangerous when you have an asymptotic approximation. But a differential equation says that if you take a certain number of derivatives, it's the same thing as taking no derivatives because you have a differential equation. And therefore, integration and differentiation are generally both justified. That's why it works. Okay. There is one thing, however, that is very, very important, and that is that if f of x is asymptotic to g of x as x approaches some value, okay, there's one thing that generally is very dangerous to do and that concerns us as physicists all the time, and a thing that you cannot do to both sides, and that is it is in general very dangerous. It's often not true that e to the f of x is asymptotic to e to the g of x. That is generally not true. Okay, so exponentiating both sides of an asymptotic approximation is the dangerous thing to do. That's what we have to be careful about. Can you see why that? Can you see why there's a problem there?
Because only the ratio is going to be 1, not the difference.
Yeah, can you give an example where you might have a problem doing that? Now, there you're okay. Okay, but you can think of something simpler than that. You don't need anything as complicated as sine of x. So how about something like this? Suppose we, is it true, first I ask you, is it true that x squared is asymptotic to x squared plus x as x goes to infinity, for example? Is that true? Of course it's true, right? However, e to the x squared is not asymptotic to e to the x squared plus x as x goes to infinity. Can you see that certainly is not true? Why is that? Because the ratio of x squared over x squared plus x is certainly 1 as x goes to infinity. But if we take the ratio of this to this, that ratio is either e to the x or e to the minus x, but it isn't 1. Okay, so it's dangerous to exponentiate in an asymptotic relation. So what is the statement? So when is it true that e, that, so question is, if f of x is asymptotic to g of x as x approaches a, when can we say that e to the f of x is asymptotic to g of x as x approaches a, if something, if what? E to the g of x as x approaches a, if something is true. What has to be true? Can you see? Well, not a number. If it were a number, it still might not be true. You see, if I had, you notice that x is asymptotic to x plus 1 as x goes to infinity. That certainly is true, right? But e to the x is not asymptotic to e to the x plus 1 as x goes to infinity. So, yeah. Very good. Perfect. That's exactly right. That's the point. If the difference between f of x and g of x, how would we say that in asymptotic language? Well, is negligible compared with 1. Okay? As x approaches a. So the difference has to be small. Small means negligible compared with 1. Okay? Does everybody see that? So it certainly is true that x is asymptotic to x plus 1 over x as x goes to infinity. That's true. You all agree, right? And it's also true that e to the x is asymptotic to e to the x plus 1 over x as x goes to infinity. Okay? Are you all comfortable with, do you understand? Yeah, are there any questions about this? This is the setting in which we need to work. So I want to show you. Yeah?
If the same is true in reverse, if you've got the exponentials being asymptotic, can you conclude that the...
Well, we can take the log of both sides. We don't have any problem with that. Okay. So, why are asymptotics useful? Sorry, this is just formal, right? So are they useful to us? All physical theories are expressed, essentially all physical theories of the world for us as physicists that we need to solve are expressed in terms of differential equations. Okay? Now, there are, as you know, there are only very few differential equations that you can solve. So if I write down a differential equation, for example, if I were to write down a Schrodinger equation, you know, y prime prime equals q of x times y. That's a Schrodinger linear second order equation, for example. If we could solve this equation, that's it. We'd understand quantum mechanics completely, right? That's it. That's the big problem. And the whole problem is that we can't solve that differential equation. This is just a linear equation. If you had a nonlinear equation, things are just totally out of hand, okay? So as soon as you go from a first order linear equation, which doesn't say much, to a second order linear equation, you've now entered the land of the hopeless. You can't solve it. So this symbol here is no longer useful. You can't use it, except in rare cases. Okay. So when can you use this symbol? Well, you can use that symbol if you can solve a Schrodinger equation. And there are only a few potentials for which you can solve the Schrodinger equation, about 3 or 4. Maybe half a dozen if you want to argue about it. And that's it. Okay? That's basically it. So, so what do we do when we have a differential equation that we can't solve? Well, we've talked about this. You use the Taylor series, right? So the question is, when is it justified to look for an answer to a differential equation in the form of a Taylor series, right? Well, there is a very comprehensive theory about this, and you, how many of you have not taken an undergraduate course in differential equations? I assume everybody has, right? So, yes, I hope you have, yeah? So you learned in an elementary course on differential equations, what do you do when you can't solve an equation? So you learned what is called Fuchs-Frobenius theory. And you learned how to come up with an approximate solution to a differential equation. And this is the idea of the theory. Let's just discuss second-order linear equations. But what I'm telling you is completely general for nth-order equations. It doesn't make any difference. So suppose you had an equation y prime prime plus a of x y prime plus b of x y equals 0. Can anybody tell me when is it true that we can find a solution to this equation near say, x equals alpha, that's some value of x, in the form of a Taylor series solution? When can you do this? Yeah.
X times a and x squared times b.
No, you're being too fancy. Much too fancy. Uh-uh. I know what you're saying, and what you're saying is right, but you're answering the wrong question. Okay, you're talking about a more specialized, a more advanced series. The question I asked was, when is it true that you can find a Taylor series solution to this equation? Taylor series solution. When is that true? Yeah.
You need a of x and b of x to have a Taylor.
Exactly. That is the point. Okay. So Fuchs proved rigorously that if a of x and b of x have Taylor series about x equals alpha. So what does that mean? It means that a of x could be written as the sum of a sub n times x minus alpha to the n. Okay? And as a Taylor series, that is, you notice there's an equal sign. Okay? The Taylor series converges, so I can write an equal sign. It exists, it converges, it's equal to a of x. And the same thing, b of x has a Taylor series, da-da-da, b sub n, x minus alpha to the n. If this is true, you notice the coefficient here is 1. Okay, and this equation is written in standard form. So you always write an equation, a linear equation, in standard form by dividing off the coefficient of this to make this is 1. Okay, so you just divide that coefficient into a and b. Okay, so if A can be written in the Taylor series, and B can be written in the Taylor series, then this implies that the solution, y of x, has a Taylor series expansion of the form y sub n, x minus alpha, to the n. But now we have to ask, what is the radius of convergence of that Taylor series? Yeah, you have a question?
In the hydrogen atom, to find the solution, we use Frobenius.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't said the word Frobenius yet. I've used the word Taylor series. Well, I'll say Frobenius in 3 seconds. Okay. Frobenius. Ah, see, I was right. So, okay, I'll talk about that in just a second. Okay. So the question is, if A and B are analytic functions, that is, they have Taylor series, then the solution is a Taylor series. But we need to know, in what region does that Taylor series converge? What's the radius of convergence of that Taylor series? Do you know? Fuchs' theory, we're not up to Frobenius' theory, but Fuchs tells us what the radius of convergence is. Say it again.
The minimum of the radius of convergence.
Excellent. Okay, you know your mathematics. That's right. So here, the radius of convergence may be R1. Okay. And here, the radius of convergence may be R2. And here, the radius of convergence is the minimum of R1 and R2. So this converges in a circle at least as big as the circle in which both A and B have Taylor series. So that's a very powerful theorem. Okay? What is interesting is that it can go beyond that. Okay? In fact, the Taylor series of the solution could well be infinite. And there I can give you examples if you like. Okay? But it is guaranteed rigorously that the Taylor series of this is at least the minimum of this. So R, the radius convergence, is greater than or equal to this minimum. But R could even be infinity. Even though, so if this has a finite radius of convergence, it's because there's a singularity in the complex x-plane. And here, there's some singularity. But even though A and B have singularities, it is entirely possible for y of x not to have any singularities at all. But it's guaranteed to exist in the biggest circle in which both A and B have Taylor series. Okay. Now, next question. Mr. Frobenius comes along and he says, yeah, but what if the functions A and B are not analytic? It is possible for these functions not to be analytic. Okay? And indeed, for the hydrogen atom, this is the case. Okay? So what do we do now? So Frobenius comes along and he says, I can generalize the work of Fuchs. Okay? He says, even if the function A and B are not analytic at alpha, I can still find a solution in rare cases. These are not unimportant cases because, as you say, it works for the hydrogen atom. But in rare cases, this can be done. When can it be done? Well, for example, suppose A of x is and B of x are not, okay, just say not analytic at x equals alpha. Okay, so they have a radius of convergence, one of them at least, has a radius of convergence of 0. Okay, it's not analytic. But now we get to the answer that you gave me before. Okay, so now give it again. I mean, for the first time, it's now relevant. Okay, so the question is, if A of x are not analytic at x equals alpha, but
x squared times b.
Okay, not x and x squared, but
x minus alpha.
Right, okay. However, so suppose, Mr. Frobenius says, suppose A and B are not analytic, but suppose, it'd be nice, that x minus alpha times A of x and x minus alpha squared times B of x are analytic. Okay. Then Frobenius says, ha, I can find a solution to the differential equation, but the solution is not in the form of a Taylor series because Mr. Fuchs warns us that that is very unlikely to be true. Could be true, but it's very unlikely. So what is the form of the solution? So the solution has the form of a Frobenius series, which is a generalization of a Taylor series. And a Frobenius series has the following form. It is x minus alpha to some constant, okay, nu, which could even be a complex number, okay, times a Taylor series, a sub n, x minus alpha, to the n. Okay, well, let's go with what I've been calling it one. Y sub n, x minus alpha to the n. That is the form. Notice there's an equality here. So this is a convergent Taylor series, okay, sum from 0 to infinity. And Mr. Fuchs guarantees us the following. He says, yeah, I know that there are two solutions, two linearly independent solutions to this equation, because it's second order. But I'm going to guarantee you that there's one solution of the form da-da-da. There's one solution of that form. What is the radius of convergence of that Taylor series? And the answer is, it is at least as big as the next singularity. Notice we made this analytic by multiplying by x minus alpha and x minus alpha squared. But there still may be other singularities of the functions a and b. So the radius of convergence is at least as large as the distance to the closest singularity of other singularity of a and b. Okay? But this is only one solution. We know there are two solutions if it's a second order differential equation. So what does the other solution look like? The answer is it may have this form as well, with a different bunch of numbers y sub n and a different number nu. Okay? Or there could also be a log of x minus alpha multiplying this. There could be a logarithm. Or it could be, most generally, in the form of a log times a structure of this form plus another structure of this form without the log. And that's the most general thing that could, the most general representation of the other solution. But the key point here is that there's an equal sign. Now, all this theory is wonderful, but the problem is it leaves out, and this is only a set of measure zero of possibilities. All the other possibilities, there is no comprehensive theory to explain what to do if you have one of the other possibilities. The question is, what do you do? So what's an example? So here's a differential equation. Y prime prime equals, say, let's write it in this form. X cubed y prime prime equals y. Okay, that's an equation not written in standard form. If I write it in standard form, I have to divide by x cubed. And suppose I wanted to know, you know, the answer to the question, what does y of x look like near x equals 0? You know, can you describe y of x to me? Okay? So you run through what you know. You know, you take this equation, x cubed y prime prime equals y, and you say, well, the first thing I would try is a Taylor series, y of x equals the sum of a sub n x to the n. Does that work? No, it's not going to work. Why? Because in this case, a, you know, written in standard form, a of x is 0, but b is 1 over x cubed. So it's singular at 0, and the solution is not likely to have a Taylor series. Okay? And furthermore, we can't make this analytic by multiplying by x squared, because it's 1 over x cubed. Okay? So a Frobenius series is not likely to work. Okay? And you can try it. I invite you to try it. You can say, let's look for a solution y in the form of a Frobenius series, say, you know, say a sub n x to the n plus some constant, nu, say 0 to infinity. And you could take the derivative of this and plug it into the equation, and it fails. Okay? Shall we do it, or are you convinced that it's going to fail? Maybe we should do it, and maybe that's more instructive. Okay. The one thing to remember is that in a Frobenius series, this is not true of Taylor series, but in a Frobenius series, y0 is never equal to 0. Why? Why is that true? Why is that the case? In a Taylor series, the first term in a Taylor expansion could be 0 for the solution. y0 could be 0. But in a Frobenius series, it's never 0. Why is that? Exactly. That's exactly right. So the point is, suppose y, 0 happen to be 0. Fine. Then I just factor out x minus alpha, change nu, add 1 to nu, and now it's non-zero, unless the next term in the series was 0, in which case I factor out. And I keep doing that until I get to a non-zero term. So that is the first non-zero term in the series. Of course, maybe there are no non-zero terms in the series. Okay, in which case, this is 0. And indeed, 0 is a solution to every linear equation. But it is of no use whatsoever. Okay, it's a true statement. 0 solves a linear equation, but who cares? Okay. So we're looking for a non-zero, a non-trivial solution to the equation. Okay? So we can always assume that a 0 is not equal to 0. So we can look for a solution to this form. Right? And so, you know, we can differentiate this twice, if we like. So we can write this as the sum from 0 to infinity. A sub n, when I differentiate it twice, I get n plus nu times n plus nu minus 1 x to the n plus nu minus 2. That's y prime prime. Everybody agree? Okay. So now I multiply by x cubed. And every term, the power of x in every term increases by 1. So instead of minus 2, we get plus 1. And the differential equation says that this is equal to the sum from n equals 0 to infinity, a sub n, x to the n plus nu. OK? Yeah? You? Fine? OK. So now, let me do the following. This involves the power n plus nu plus 1. This involves the power n plus nu. So everywhere I see n, let me lower n by 1, and let me raise, let me compensate by raising the endpoint of summation. So this is the sum from n equals 1 to infinity, a sub n, and now I'm going to lower n. So this is a sub n minus 1, n minus 1 plus nu. N minus 2 plus nu, x to the n plus nu. OK, and that's equal to this. OK? And now I look at both sides and I compare powers of x to the n plus nu, because we are looking for a Frobenius series, which is a convergent series. So we have every right to compare powers of x. OK? So you with me? And so you notice there is an x to the n plus nu here, but not here, when n equals 0. And therefore, we conclude that a 0 is equal to 0. Contradiction. Okay? Because we assume that a 0 is not equal to 0. Okay? So there's no solution. So what do we do? This differential equation has solutions, but we have no rigorous theory that tells us what to do at this point. It's hard to believe, but this is the edge, this is the end of what is known rigorously, in general, generally rigorously, about second-order linear differential equations. So this point is never addressed in a differential equations course. But I want to know what the solution to this equation looks like. And it turns out that we do have a very powerful approach, but we can't write down what the solution is equal to. So we have the only way to crack into this problem is to give up any hope of using an equal sign. We cannot say the solution equals that. We can only say the solution is asymptotic to that. Okay? What is nice, of course, is that when I write down an asymptotic approximation, it is as close as I like to the correct answer. If you want an answer to this differential equation that is accurate to one part in 10 to the 10, I can give it to you. If you want the answer accurate to one part in 10 to the 500, I can give it to you. You can write it down explicitly in closed form. Okay? But I cannot write down the answer. Okay, so that's so asymptotics is a thing that makes you very, very powerful. And all along, we have been doing asymptotics. And the question is, who was the first person who sort of provided a clue for how to attack this problem? And it goes way back. And it goes back to about 1800, somewhere between 1801 and 1803 or 4, something like that. And the guy who gets credit for coming up with the idea is Mr. Green. Okay? I mean, you've seen Green's theorem and Green's identity and all this kind of thing. It's Mr. Green. He's a very clever guy. Okay? So this is what Mr. Green says. Okay? And so what I'm telling you is not completely comprehensive. Okay? It's not a completely rigorous general theory, but it works in every case that you can write down, and certainly every case of interest in physics, without any question. So what do we do? So Mr. Green, let me just use a word. If both A and B are analytic at alpha, then alpha is called a regular point of the differential equation. This is just words, okay? But alpha is called a regular point or an ordinary point. There are two words, regular or ordinary, of the differential equation. And at a regular point or an ordinary point of a differential equation, the solution, all solutions, not just one, but all solutions exist in the form of Taylor series. If we have a situation where Frobenius applies, alpha is now no longer a regular point, so that's a singular point. But in particular, for the case where Frobenius applies, it's called a, you know? Who said? Yes, regular, you're exactly right. That's called a regular singular point. And I have always laughed at that term. I think it's a ridiculous term. It's an oxymoron, okay? I mean, it's a contradictory, it's an internally contradictory English statement, which is crazy. A regular singular point? I mean, it's like saying airline food. Okay, it's an oxymoron. It doesn't, you know, military intelligence. It's like saying to someone, you're pretty ugly. It doesn't make sense, you know. Or, you know, jumbo shrimp. It's a contradiction. What do you mean by regular singular point? But that's the case where Frobenius series exists. So we need a word for all other cases. And these are the things, this is just a set of measure zero. So the question is, what do you do in all the other interesting cases? So in that case, for all other cases, this is called, do you know? It's a irregular singular point, which is really funny, but that's what it's called. Okay, so this is how Mr. Green, if he were here, this is how he would argue. Actually, he might, well, never mind. Okay, so he would say the following. Let's, just for fun, let's look at some very simple cases, not second-order equations, but a first-order equation. If I gave you the equation y prime, first-order equation, equals, say, 2y, or say 1/2 y, that'll be nice, 1/2 y. So that is an equation where x equals 0, can you classify the point x equals 0? Is this a regular point, a regular singular point, or an irregular singular point of this equation? It's obviously a regular point. And you know what the solution looks like. What is the solution? OK, it's e to the x over 2. That's the solution, times some constant. And you notice this solution has a Taylor series about x equals 0. So this is no surprise. Okay, so Fuchs tells us the solution has a Taylor series. Okay, now consider this equation, 1 over 2x times y. Okay, what kind of point is x equals 0? Now you notice, this is a first order equation. You notice this coefficient here becomes analytic if you multiply it by x. So we expect the solution to have a Frobenius series. And it does. What's the solution? No. Think of a function which, when you differentiate it, is the same thing as multiplying that function by 1 over 2x. Say it again? No. There's a 2 here. 2. Say it again? Root x. That's right. So y is some constant times the square root of x. And in this case, nu, the Frobenius, this is the Frobenius index, nu is 1/2. So you've said it right, and nu is 1/2. And you notice the Frobenius series here truncates after one term, but who cares? It doesn't matter. Okay? So there's a series, and all the coefficients in that series are 0. Big deal. Okay, so now let's consider 1 over 2x squared times y. Okay, now x equals 0 is an irregular singular point. But in this case, because the equation is only first order, we know we can write down the solution. Can anybody tell me what is the solution to this equation? There's obviously a constant, right? It's a linear equation. It's got to have an arbitrary constant. But what's the solution? What's a function which, when you differentiate it, is the same thing as multiplying that function by 1 over 2x squared? Good. Exactly. E to the minus 1 over 2x. That's right. So if you differentiate this once, you pull down a 1 over 2x squared, and that's the same thing as multiplying the function by 1 over 2x squared. And so how does this function behave at 0? So Mr. Green looks at the function, and he says, ah, look, that's a function which has an essential singularity. You notice that either it has a Taylor series, no singularity, or it has a Frobenius series, which means that it's a Taylor series multiplied by x to some power, so it either has a pole or a branch point. So it's a simple kind of singularity, either a pole or a branch point. However, Mr. Green notes that now we have a very complicated singularity. This is an essential singularity. Okay, it's a very complicated thing. It's not a pole or a branch point. It's a complicated singularity. And so, what does Mr. Green observe? He says it may turn out that a solution, you notice it's an exponential of a function that has a singularity. You remember I was telling you before about exponentiating asymptotic relations? Remember that? Okay, so this is an exponential of a singularity. What is the key point? Suppose I look for a solution in the form of an exponential. Mr. Green says, if I need to solve the equation x cubed y prime prime equals y, I should look for a solution in the form of an exponential and see if I can calculate the function s. Okay? That's what he says. But we need a clue. Because if I just substitute this into this equation, what am I going to get? I'm going to get, when I take one derivative, I get e to the s of x times s prime of x. And when I take two derivatives, I get s prime of x squared plus s prime prime of x times e to the s of x. So if I just use Mr. Green's substitution, okay, into this equation, I get an equation that reads s prime prime plus s prime squared equals 1 over x cubed. So big deal. This is an equation. It's complicated. What do? I've just converted one equation I can't solve into another equation I can't solve. This equation is really a first-order equation, right? It's a first-order equation, but it's nonlinear. So this is no progress by itself. That's just a change of variables, no progress. So we need a clue, and Mr. Green gives us the clue, and the clue is this. We are looking for a solution that has some sort of singular behavior at infinity. So the clue about how to proceed is this. If we had a function like y equals e to the a x to the b, and I'm going to put in a minus sign here because it's, you know, because I'm thinking it's something like this, some solution like e to the constant times x to some negative power, something that has some essential singular behavior to infinity. If I'm looking for a solution like this, let's look at what the solution behaves like. Okay? So if I take a derivative, what do I get? I get minus ab x to the minus b minus 1 e to the a x to the minus b. Do you agree? And if I take two derivatives of this, y prime prime, there will be two terms, just the way I had two terms here. Okay, I have an s prime prime or I have an s prime squared. So s prime prime would be the derivative of this, which is minus, or which is plus a b, b plus 1, x to the minus b minus 2. Okay? And if I take a derivative of this, I get a squared b squared x to the minus 2b minus 2. And all this is multiplied by e to the a x to the minus b. So this came from taking, this is like the s prime prime term, and this is like the s prime squared term. And now, Mr. Green takes a page from Shakespeare and solves the problem. What do I mean? What's the difference between these two terms? The question is, to be or not to be? OK? This is B. This is to be. OK? What? So this is a crucial difference, absolutely crucial. So what is different about this? In the limit, remember, we're interested in the limit as x goes to 0. Okay? We want to ask, what is the behavior of the solution to this equation near x equals 0? And near x equals 0, what is happening here? Well, this is x to a negative power. This is x to a more negative power. So as x goes to 0, which of these two terms is the important term? And clearly, this is the unimportant term. OK? That's the key thing. So let's go back over here. So we think, this is not always true, but it's almost always true, we think it will be useful to say that s prime prime is negligible compared with s prime squared as x goes to 0. That's what Mr. Green tells us. That's his insight. Okay? It's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant because now he's cracked open the problem. Okay? And this is, by the way, you must remember what I'm telling you today, because if you do any level of theoretical physics, you are going to use this approximation. It doesn't matter what area of theoretical physics. And you're going to see why in a moment. Okay? So what I'm going to say is this. Up to this point, we have been dealing with equalities, and we cannot make progress because there's an equal sign. But now, I can make progress. I can replace that equal sign by the statement that s prime of x squared is asymptotic to 1 over x cubed as x goes to 0. You see? But now, having made this asymptotic approximation, I can perform any type of operation on both sides of this equation. So first of all, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a square root. So I conclude that S prime of x is asymptotic to plus or minus 1 over x to the 3 halves as x goes to 0. And now I can integrate both sides. And if I do that, I get S of x is asymptotic to, now the integral of x to the minus, let's write it as x to the minus 3 halves, the integral of that is x to the minus 1 half times minus 2. Right? So I have minus or plus 2 times x to the minus 1 half. OK? So I now know what s is. OK? As x goes to 0. OK? So now what do? I can write down the answer. I now know that y of x, which is e to the s, is asymptotic to e to the, you know, plus or minus, minus or plus, doesn't matter, x to the minus 1 half as x goes to 0. OK? And now I know what the solution looks like. Yes?
So you just
exponentiated. You're right. It's a little bit more subtle than that. OK? So I made a mistake on purpose. And someone had to catch it, and it just happened to be you. Okay, thank you. So this is not a correct statement. It is correct to say that y equals e to the s, but it is not necessarily correct to say that there's an asymptotic symbol there. We can't say that. But we do know what the behavior of y, the function y of x is. It's going to be, this is a very fancy function here. Oh, this is a 2, sorry. Okay, this is a very fancy function, and you notice the solution is varying very rapidly near x equals 0. Okay, it's either blowing, depending on the plus or minus signs, either blowing up like crazy, or it's going to 0 like crazy. Okay, and that's because we are near an irregular singular point of the differential equation. Okay, so what do we do next? So Mr. Green tells us what to do, or he actually, I don't think he got beyond this point. But now we know what to do. It's not very hard. We need a better approximation to the function s. We need to find the correction to s, because we need to know whether or not, so we do know that s is asymptotic to minus or plus 2x to the minus 1 half. We know that. As x goes to 0. We know that. But we need a better approximation because we need to know whether or not we can exponentiate this. So we need to know whether or not that approximation, if we were to find a better approximation, whether that approximation is negligible, the correction to this, is negligible compared with 1. Because if it is, then we can exponentiate it. Okay? So this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to say, fine, we've gotten this far. Therefore, I'm going to use an equal sign again. S is equal to minus or plus 2x to the minus 1 half, okay, plus a correction term, C of x. But because we are doing asymptotics, we know that C of x is small compared with x to the minus 1 half as x goes to 0. Okay? And furthermore, I'm going to take the liberty of differentiating my asymptotic approximation. We know that C prime would be small compared with x to the minus 3 halves. And C double prime would be small compared with x to the minus 5 halves, all as x goes to 0. Okay? Now, what do I do? Well, if this is S, then S prime would be equal to, this is an equal sign, so S prime would be equal to plus or minus x to the minus 3 halves plus C prime of x. And S double prime would be equal to minus or plus again 3 halves x to the minus 5 halves plus C double prime. Do you agree? Is this clear? Okay. So now, okay, great. We have an equation for S. And this equation for S is an equality. And we can plug these equalities into this equality and get an equality. So first I plug in S double prime, which is minus or plus, minus or plus 3/2 x to the minus 5/2 plus c double prime. Okay? And then we have s prime squared. And s prime squared would be, that's the square of plus or minus x to the minus 3/2 plus c prime squared. And this has to be equal to 1 over x cubed. And now all I need to do is to multiply out the square. Okay? When I multiply out the square, I get 1 over x cubed, squaring that, and c prime squared, okay, squaring that, and then plus or minus 2 times, is that a, did I write a plus or minus here? Yeah, that's minus or plus. Okay, so plus or minus 2 times c prime times x to the minus 3/2. Okay? So that's what I get if I multiply it out. So all this has to be equal to 1 over x cubed, this thing and this thing. Okay? Now what do I do? Well, this is an equality, and you notice that I can simplify it a little bit. Okay? I have a 1 over x cubed and a 1 over x cubed. Big deal. It still is a horrendous equation. This is horrible. We have taken a nice, simple differential equation, only two terms long. And what have we done? This is a monster. Look at the equation for the function c of x. Okay? It begins, this is minus or plus, right? So it begins minus or plus 3/2 x to the minus 5/2 plus c prime prime. Then this term was canceled, but then we have c prime squared and plus or minus 2 c prime x to the minus 3/2 equals 0. Ah, this is absolutely awful. A nonlinear second order differential equation. Pretty awful. I mean, just horrible. Sorry? Okay, is that okay? Don't let me make a mistake. Yeah.
Is that really horrible?
It's horrible. It's a nonlinear. This is a first order equation, of course, because it only contains c double prime and c prime. So it's a first order equation for c prime. But it's nonlinear. It's a Riccati equation. We can't solve that. There's no way. Cannot solve that. However, we can turn the equality into an asymptotic approximation, which we can solve. Whenever you have an equality, you can't solve it. When you have an asymptotic approximation, you can. Why? Because we just said that c double prime is negligible compared with x to the minus 5/2. So we know that since this equation contains an x to the minus 5/2, this thing is negligible as x goes to 0. Furthermore, we know that c prime is negligible compared with x to the minus 3/2. This equation contains c prime times c prime. But this equation contains c prime times x to the minus 3/2. Which is bigger? We know that this is big and that's not big. Great! Throwing away this term made it into a first order equation. Throwing away this term makes it into a linear equation. What could be better? This is really great. So by using asymptotics, we've reduced this equation to a trivial equation. And now we can solve this equation. And you notice that there is a minus or plus here and a plus or minus there, right? So I get rid of the plus or minus. Okay. And so what I have is x to the minus 5/2 and then just minus 2c prime x to the minus 3 halves equals 0, or is asymptotic. I can't say it equals anymore, but it's asymptotic to 0. Right? You have a question.
You said that you can't have
absolutely. Absolutely. So I made another mistake. So we have to be very careful. Nothing is asymptotic to 0. We can say that something is equal to 0. We cannot say that it's asymptotic. So what we have to write, we have to be very careful, we have to say, is asymptotic to that. Okay? We have to be very, very careful. As x goes to 0. We always have to include a limit with the statement. And now, okay? Sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, 3 halves. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so now we're making a lot of progress. We can certainly multiply this asymptotic relation, both sides of it, by 1 half and by x to the 3 halves, no problem. So we conclude that c prime is asymptotic to 3 quarters x to the minus 1. Okay? And therefore, c is asymptotic to 3 quarters log of x. Aha! So now, I have to go back to the comment that you made. Was it valid for me to say, since this is s, that I could exponentiate both sides? Was it valid to do that? And the answer is it a yes or a no? Remember, we said, all right, let's look for s in this form, and we just calculated c. This is c is asymptotic to 3 quarters log x as x goes to 0. Was it valid to exponentiate both sides? No. This is not negligible compared with 1. As x goes to 0, log of x blows up. So it's not small compared with 1. Okay? However, if we now repeat this process again and again and again, the next correction will be s is equal to minus or plus 2x to the minus 1 half. This blows up like 1 over the square root of x, okay? Plus 3 quarters log of x plus d of x. And you will see that d of x, if we do, we don't have time, but it's not important to continue this process because it gets boring after a while. But d of x is small compared with 1. In fact, d of x turns out to be asymptotic to like the square root of x as x goes to 0, some constant beta or something like that, times the square root of x as x goes to 0. Okay, so this is small, so therefore d of x is small compared with 1 as x goes to 0. Okay? Therefore, it is valid to exponentiate this relationship written right here. And we now know that y of x is asymptotic to e to the minus or plus 2 over the square root of x plus c. And c is 3 quarters log x, so it's times x to the 3 quarters, okay, as x goes to 0. And I invite you to do a plot. This might be a fun thing to do for practice. The question is, do you believe this? We now know what both solutions to the differential equation look like. One blows up exponentially. One goes to 0 exponentially. There is a power of x correction, and that's what this solution looks like. And we can continue calculating here. Okay? Remember I said the correction was d of x, which is the square root of x? And if you include that, you will find that there is, when you exponentiate the square root of x, you get 1 plus a constant times the square root of x plus another constant times x plus another constant times x to the 3 halves, and so on. So you can look at the solution. Look at the nature of the solution. The first part is an exponential term. The second part is like a Frobenius correction. The third part is Taylor-like. It is a Taylor-like series, but not an x in a fractional power of x. And this is quite general. That's the nature of the solution. Okay? And you can calculate these coefficients easily. Now, I have several important remarks. What's the first remark? The first remark is that we have a series here. Do you think the series converges? No way. This is a divergent series. That's the first fact. Whenever you solve a differential equation, except for a set of measure zero, the series that you end up with is a divergent series. So the only way to make sense out of this in an accurate way, to get a very accurate sum of the series, is to PaDe that series. In fact, what we have been doing is perturbation theory without telling you that, except there isn't any perturbation parameter. What is the perturbation parameter? It's x itself. Okay? So this is the nature of a solution. This is how the general type, I mean, this is how we really attack a grown-up problem. I mean, you wouldn't think this is a grown-up type problem to solve, but this is a very, very hard problem to solve, and we have found the solution. Okay, and that's what it looks like. But the question is, what have I been doing? And why did I tell you this was important? Okay, so let me show you that. So this will only take, I'll finish in just about 2 minutes. Okay, what if we had the general case? What if we had the equation y prime prime equals q of x times y? Instead of, you know, instead of just picking some specific equation, let's take a general equation. Let's remember what we just did. Okay, what we did was we said, Mr. Green tells us, let to make the substitution, let y equals e to the s. We then get the equation s prime squared plus s double prime equals q of x. Then we say, yeah, a question?
This is a second order differential equation, so
there are two solutions.
Yeah, and we should have like two
plus or minus.
We have like initial conditions, we should have two initial conditions. Like in this solution.
Yeah, there are
like
two solutions here, plus or minus.
No, I'm not talking about two possible solutions. I'm talking about the initial value.
Well, we have to be very careful, because can we specify an initial condition at zero? That's at a singular point of the differential equation. At a regular point of the differential equation, we can. Okay. However, if we impose one initial condition, a boundary condition, that y of 0 equals 0, that would say that the only solution that we have here is the one with the minus sign. We could impose that condition. Okay. You cannot impose the condition that y of 0 is 1, however, because the solution either blows up or goes to zero. So you can't, you're not free to impose arbitrary boundary conditions or initial conditions at a singular point. You have to be very careful. So I've just told you what the nature of the solution is. If you have any old solution starting, say, at x equals 1, and you integrate it down to zero, it'll either blow up exponentially fast or go to zero exponentially fast. That's, or a mixture, a linear combination of the two. Okay? So now, with just a two-minute comment, let's consider the general equation. What were we really doing? This is the differential equation. Okay? How did we solve? This is hopeless. We can't solve this. So we then say, as x approaches some place, almost any place, any interesting place in the equation, as x approaches a, we threw away that term and we said s prime squared is asymptotic to q. And therefore, s prime is asymptotic to plus or minus the square root of q. And therefore, s is asymptotic to the integral, plus or minus the integral up to x of the square root of q of t dt. Okay? That's what s is. Okay? But then we said, wait a minute, we can't just plug this result into here because we don't know that it's valid to exponentiate this asymptotic approximation. We don't know that. Because you told us, right? You said, don't do that. Be careful, okay? So what do? We say, let S equal this plus or minus square root of Q of T dt plus some correction term. I'm waiting to see your faces light up when you see what's happening here. Okay? I don't see any ahas coming along. Oh, cut it out. So S prime is plus or minus the square root of Q plus C prime. And S double prime is plus or minus 1 over 2 square root of Q times Q prime plus C double prime. All right? Now, I take this guy, all of this stuff, and I plug it back into this equation. So the first thing is the square of that, right? First thing is S prime squared, which is C prime squared plus Q plus or minus 2C prime square root of Q. Okay, this should look familiar because now we're just doing it in general. Okay, the next term is S double prime. And S double prime is C prime prime plus or minus Q prime over 2 square root of Q. Okay? And that's equal to Q. Okay? That's the equation. This is a horrendous equation. There is a slight simplification. Do you remember the way 1 over x cubed canceled out here? Well, now you notice that Q cancels from both sides of the equation. So I now have a 0 on the right-hand side. But I can't make progress on this. That's a hopeless equation. Except, remember that we have made here, we're assuming that we're finding a correction to this. So C prime has to be negligible compared with the square root of Q. And C double prime has to be negligible compared with Q prime over 2 square root of Q. This is a correction term. Right? So look, here's a C double prime. This is a higher order equation, but it's negligible compared with this term in the equation, so I'll throw it away. Okay? And furthermore, we said that C prime is negligible compared with the square root of Q. And therefore, you know, here is a C prime squared, which makes the equation nonlinear. And here is a C prime times the square root of Q. So this guy has to be smaller than that. So I'll throw this away. And I notice there's a plus or minus here on both sides. So therefore, I can write 2c prime square root of q plus q prime over 2 square root of q is now asymptotic to 0. No, you can't do that. You told me we can't do that. So I'm not going to do that. So it's really asymptotic to minus that. Now I have a correct statement. Okay. Have you seen it yet? Do you see what's happening here? Okay, one more step. Let's solve this equation. So I get C prime is asymptotic to minus Q prime over 4Q. Now that's the equation for C prime. So C is asymptotic to minus 1 quarter log of Q. Okay? Right? So, I know that this is likely to be blowing up at 0. But the next correction, which I haven't shown you, is small compared with 1. When I say I don't mean 0, I mean as x approaches a, whatever a is. We're doing this in general. So, how do I conclude? I conclude by arguing, I have to show, but I won't show, that if we did it yet again, that the correction would be negligible. And in general, it is. And so therefore, I cannot exponentiate this asymptotic approximation here. But I can exponentiate the asymptotic exponentiate this integral plus c, because the next correction is small compared with 1. And I conclude that e to the s, which is the solution to the equation y, is asymptotic to e to the plus or minus integral of the square root of q of t dt plus, or rather, minus 1/4 log of q. And there's two solutions to the equation, so there's some coefficient outside. And that's what the solution looks like. Or I could write this, hopefully, I'm waiting to see a whole flash of recognition. I'm not seeing it yet. What is that? What did we derive? What is that? Say it again. Finally, yes, this is WKB. WKB. That's what we have discovered. If you want to know who gets credit for WKB, it's not Wenzel, Kramers, and Briand. It's Green. It should be called G theory, not WKB theory. Okay? To be fair, actually, Wenzel, Kramers, and Briand didn't understand it anywhere near as Lord Jeffreys, not even close to comprehension at the level of Lord Jeffreys. And that's why a lot of people call this WKBJ theory in honor of Jeffreys, because Jeffreys understood it far better than WK or B. But to be fair, it should really be called GWKB theory. However, Jeffreys did not really understand this anywhere near as well as Lord Rayleigh, who really had a deep understanding. So, should be called. Actually, I would be happy just to call this R theory or G theory or something like that. But the more initials it has, the more it's distinguished from other things. You know, you might confuse R theory with rabbit theory or radio theory or something. We have discovered WKB theory. Okay, that is what asymptotics gives us. It gives us a solution to the equation. Okay, and the solution to our equation can be made as accurate as you like, because we can take as many terms in this series here as you like. That's the point. Yeah?
How quickly does it go to the right answer, like with calculating more terms in the series?
This is blowing up. That series is blowing up.
Well, okay.
But if we pade, same thing here. The WKB series blows up. Okay. In general, the WKB series is a divergent series. They don't tell you that, but it is a divergent series. What they do is when they teach you WKB, is they say let S equal S naught plus S1 plus S2 and so on. And usually they put, this is an irrelevancy, by the way, I'm not joking about this. This is an irrelevancy. When they write down the Schrodinger equation, they say, there's an h bar squared, and they say h bar is small. Okay, so they look for a series of the form of that form. Okay, and they say h bar is small, and so this justifies doing this. That's complete and total nonsense, because h bar is not a small number. Everybody knows that h bar equals 1 in preferred units. It is not a small number. Only in the MKS system is it 10 to the minus 34, blah, blah, blah. But that's baloney. It is not a small number. And therefore, this is WKB is not justified on the basis that h-bar is small. Rather, WKB is justified on the basis that we are solving the Schrodinger equation, the differential equation, in the vicinity of an irregular singular point. That's what justifies the use of WKB. And that we are using proper asymptotic methods. Okay? And that is the thing that justifies WKB. And we have derived the WKB approximation. The reason why we derived the WKB approximation is, the argument goes basically, there ain't two approximations just like this approximation right near this approximation, so this must be the approximation. Okay, there aren't two approximations to a differential equation because there's only one solution. So this has to be it, and that's the WKB approximation. Okay, so next time, what I will show you is how to handle this series. The name of this series is, this is an asymptotic series. It's a divergent series, just like this series. This series is an asymptotic series. And I have defined for you an asymptotic relation. Next time, I'll define for you an asymptotic series and show you what to do and how you add it up. And then I'll show you the specific asymptotic series that we really can sum up to get the right answer, okay, which is using pod A. Okay? So that's the theory. Okay?